This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. During his time in office, President Barack Obama has granted clemency to 944 people, including 72 people whose sentences were shortened earlier this month. Most of those people were convicted of drug-related nonviolent crimes. Second-year student at the University of Cincinnati College of Law, Ariel Gugisberg, helped draft the clemency petition for one of the prisoners whose sentence was commuted. And once out of jail, the individuals with felonies on their records have a tough time finding work. And Stephen Johnson Grove, senior staff attorney at the Ohio Justice and Policy Center, was instrumental in writing and pushing through a fair hiring statute and policy that gives workers with criminal records a fair chance at civil service and engagement in their communities. And Ariel and Stephen join us today to talk about clemency and how to reintegrate people who've been incarcerated back into society. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ariel, when we talk about clemency, what exactly do we mean by that? How's that defined?
Well, clemency is something that, well, President Obama created, or he had an initiative to commute these sentences, which can be shortening sentences. It can be taking a life sentence down to 20 years, 20 years in our case down to a little more than 13 years. It can mean a whole slew of things, but for this purpose, it means mostly shortening sentences where they were sentenced, draconian sentences prior to the new changes in the law that allowed shorter sentences for the same charges.
But it could be like commuting, it could be pardoning, it could be any number of different things that, fall into that category of clemency.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen, with President Obama granting clemency for more than 900 people, is that just the tip of the iceberg? I mean, are there a lot of people who would be eligible for clemency?
Well, eligibility is one question. Anybody's eligible for clemency. Anyone can apply to their – if it's a federal charge, it can apply to the president. If it's a state charge, it can apply to the governor. And clemency, as you said, is just any form of mercy that the executive branch gets to to extend to someone in prison. The question is, who can we safely and responsibly let out? How can we safely and responsibly reduce our vastly overcrowded prison population? There are nearly 2 million people currently incarcerated in America. About 10% of those are on federal charges. And so the 900 – so that's about 200,000 people. So the 900 people or so that have come out at some point during President Obama's term in office is obviously, the tip of the tip of the iceberg.
Any idea how many people are incarcerated for low-level crimes, that type of thing?
Well, that's a what do you call low level? I will say that in Ohio, which is my expertise, the state-based incarceration, 45% of people that went into prison last year were for F4s and F5s. And incidentally, that's fourth-degree misdemeanors and fifth-degree misdemeanors, the two lowest classifications – or excuse me, fourth-degree felonies and fifth-degree felonies. Fifth-degree felonies didn't used to exist at all. They all used to be misdemeanors. So some might even say that fifth-degree felonies shouldn't be felonies at all. Those you would say is a pretty low-level crimes. That's how many – 45% of the people who went into prison last year were for those lower-level offenses.
Okay. Now, what does the president's actions – what do those actions say about the need for changing our sentencing guidelines and our sentencing laws?
Well, Obama at multiple times, through this clemency process and, at different points during the campaign season and just non-campaign events, he was one of the first sitting presidents – I think the only sitting president to visit a federal prison in Oklahoma – has brought up the problem of mass incarceration and raised that as an issue. Clemency being an extraordinary action and the president himself being somewhat of a bottleneck, being one person who can consider all those requests, he decided to pick the most sympathetic, lowest level. And I think Ariel can speak to the specific factors that the president laid out for who he would consider for this clemency request. It was a very, very, very narrow class of people.
Yeah, so they looked at factors. We had to prove 8 factors in our executive summary. So currently serving a sentence that would be substantially lower today if served or if sentenced today, nonviolent offenders, low-level offenders, the client had served at least 10 years of a sentence, the defendant has no ties to large-scale criminal organizations, gangs, or cartels, does not have a significant criminal history, has demonstrated good conduct in prison, and has no history of violence prior to or during the current term of imprisonment.
Now, tell us about the case that you worked on. It was Michael Morris?
Yes.
Okay, tell us some more about that case.
Well, he was sentenced for crack cocaine, which many people may not know, but crack cocaine is the same substance as pure cocaine, but it's
But it gets a harsher sentence, doesn't it?
Definitely, yes. So there were some amendments with the Fair Sentencing Act in 2010 that lessened the ratio of the disparity in sentences for crack versus pure cocaine, powder cocaine. However, he was originally sentenced to 20 years, and we were able to commute his sentence down to a little more than 13 years. So he was released in July of this year. Yeah, it was great.
Have you kept up with him and how he's doing?
We have heard that he's doing great. He's staying well. Maybe I shouldn't say where he's staying, but he is doing well. He's doing really well so far.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. What are the challenges people face? I mean, it has to be difficult when you get clemency or you've just been released from prison. Life has to be pretty difficult, doesn't it, Stephen? There's a lot that you encounter.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times people are released to obviously the clemencies are extraordinary. In Cincinnati, we have our Innocence Project, which has released some of the most well-publicized folks for crimes they never committed. But even they struggle on the outside and have very little support. For those that did commit their offenses and serve their terms, or in this case get clemency, they're followed for the rest of their lives by their criminal record. And that's true whether or not you went to prison, even misdemeanors these days. But yes, coming out of prison is extraordinarily difficult. Reintegrating into your family, your neighborhood, especially finding a job is extraordinarily difficult because of the fact of a criminal record.
And I will add, for the petition, that is something that we completely harped on, was that, you know, Mr. Morris had a really great support system waiting for him on the outside. And that's something that we wanted to prove in every petition, because we have two still in the queue in limbo waiting to hear back. So that was very important for us to prove as well.
How important is that support system, Ariel?
I think it's pretty vital, because if you come out of prison to nothing and no support system, nowhere to turn, I don't know how you could really get so far, especially since you have that following around, as Stephen just said. I can imagine it would be pretty difficult, so the support system really helps.
It is absolutely essential, and that's why before she left, our wonderful reentry coordinator here in Hamilton County, Deanna Hoskins, one of her big priorities was setting up a mentoring program. I think she called them the OGs. But those fellows were guys that had spent time in and around the criminal justice system and had just knew how to relate to folks coming out and could support them and coach them and give them that both accountability but also like love and support, because it's just absolutely necessary to sometimes just reacclimating to how society is structured, you know, buses, how buses work these days, how smartphones work these days. A lot of that is just part of the problem.
Stephen, so having that support system is crucial. Mm-hmm. How key is having a job in terms of reducing recidivism, the chance that somebody's going to end up back in prison?
Yeah, it is. I don't have the stats on the recidivism rate based on employment, but it is essential. And having a job increases the safety to the community, that is, people less likely to offend. The better paying that job is, the less likely people are to reoffend. If it's an absolute bottom of the basement, minimum wage job, sometimes people still revert because they can't survive. And so living wage employment is really critical to success once you get out. The really exciting thing I want to talk about is that the Center for Employment Opportunities is a fantastic organization out of New York City. And they've kind of piloted this model of – it's sort of like day labor. People get paid on the day, and they exclusively serve folks getting out of jail. And what they do is they get them into something like day labor. They do actually fulfill contracts on behalf of the government, for example, doing maintenance and janitorial work around a courthouse, let's say, or government buildings. Those folks get a lot of personal social coaching in addition to getting job skills, and then they're graduated out to full-time unsubsidized employment beyond. The reason I lift up that model is because Cincinnati, with its new Greenlight Fund, has just invited the Center for Employment Opportunities to replicate their program here in partnership with Cincinnati Works and the CityLink Center.
How does the call for sentencing reform, for changing the way the sentencing guidelines and laws, how does that jibe with the increase in the heroin and the opioid epidemics?
Yeah. You're pulling together a lot of big threads there. It is absolutely essential. while what we've talked about up till now, what I've been discussing is removing barriers for people after prison and jail, after they've gotten a criminal conviction, you're absolutely right. There's things we can do at the front end. Sentencing, as you referenced, is a way to change how many people are going in. And even earlier, we talked about policing reform. Why do we have to send so many people into the belly of the criminal justice system to solve the problems that are arising? There are certainly problems. Violence happens, drug addiction happens, theft and property damage happens. These things happen. The question is whether sending people into the criminal justice system is the way to fix it. So the heroin epidemic as a public health crisis is getting people to rethink, do we need the criminal justice system to be our answer to this systemic problem of being flooded by this cheap and potent heroin? I think the biggest thing that's highlighting this, and Director Gary Moore of our Ohio prison system, of the Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, Ohio's prison system, has highlighted how the fastest growing population in our prison system is actually white rural women. It's not from the major urban counties, and it is this incredible growth in white rural women entirely based on heroin addiction. It's either heroin itself or some kind of theft or violence that related directly to the person's addiction to heroin. So these things are driving our prison population these days.
Ariel, any thoughts?
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree completely. I understand that the sentencing reforms can come, you know, I agree with what you said.
As a law student, is this something that's becoming more and more of an issue? Or are you talking about this more and more in law school?
I mean, it does come up, yeah. In certain contexts, it does come up. However, it's not necessarily on the forefront of anything, but it is an underlying issue that is brought up in different contexts, like health law, criminal law. You know, in certain contexts, it does.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us today to talk about clemency and how to reintegrate people who've been incarcerated back into society, University of Cincinnati College of Law student Ariel Gugisberg and Stephen Johnson Grove, senior staff attorney at the Ohio Justice and Policy Center. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Ariel, we started off talking about clemency itself and the fact that this is something that pretty much anybody can apply for. What's the process like of applying for clemency, and how long does it usually take for that whole thing to work its way through?
Sure. Well, for the Clemency Project specifically, I'm not sure how it goes outside of the Clemency Project, but as far as the Clemency Project, which was an initiative started in 2014, what it was the attorneys that I work for. So I work for Marty Pinellas and Candace Krause. Marty was the previous president of NACDL, and then Candace is on the board of directors. So they were very interested in volunteering their time for this. So volunteers were assigned a potential candidate for clemency, and then we review all of their information to see if they meet the requirements. And then what we do is we compile an executive summary explaining how exactly they make the requirements, how they meet them, and then we send it off to a screening and then a steering committee who gives us feedback, and then we complete the petition to go to the Office of the Pardon Attorney for recommendation of commutation or clemency to the president. So once the president makes his decision, then the Office of the Pardon Attorney actually contacted Candace. So we were able to tell Mr. Morris that he was granted clemency, and it was quite the experience. It was really great. So,
what was that like when you told him?
It was like nothing else. Seeing, you know, they arranged a meeting, so the warden brought him into the office, and I think that he thought he was in trouble for something. And so when we broke the news to him, it was just pure excitement and pure joy. It was wonderful. It was nothing like I've ever experienced before.
So how long did this take in his case?
Well, we began the petition the summer of 2015, and then so it took quite a while. I mean, he was granted clemency in March 30th, I believe, And then he got out in July. So within a year, though, he was out of prison. So, yeah.
And I'm just curious, too, what makes a drug crime a federal crime versus a state offense? And in this case, you said Michael Morris, he was convicted for crack cocaine. What's the difference there?
Weight, primarily.
You're talking about how much you actually have.
Yeah. And it also has to do with transporting across state lines sometimes. Yes. And things like that.
Again, 513-419-7100 if you would like to join the conversation. Now, Stephen, you did a lot of work to get Ohio's fair hiring law into place.
That's right. That started incidentally, in 2009 here in Cincinnati. We passed the very first local ordinance that removed the barrier for people with felony records to work with the city of Cincinnati. And since then, we got dozens of other cities across the state to also pass those ordinances. And then last year, we passed House Bill 56, which removed the barrier for people with felony records to be able to work in state government jobs. And it doesn't guarantee anybody a job. All it does is it says that you aren't automatically excluded based on a felony.
So what are the specific components? I mean, I think ban the box is one of the components.
Yeah, so the key ingredients of an effective fair hiring policy is, number one, ban the box. That means just remove the question from the job application that says, have you ever been convicted of? Because that has often just been an automatic trigger for the trash can. Instead, people with felony records should be able to present their qualifications first. Then there should be notice, because sometimes there are state laws. Aside from anything else, there's state and federal laws that prevent people with specific offenses from working in specific jobs. So someone who recently had an embezzlement conviction might not be able to work in the city finance department. I'm okay with that. Somebody with a sex offense or a violent offense might not be able to work in the daycare center. That's fine. But the question we had in Cincinnati, for example, our hallmark case was a man named Gene Mays. He had a 12-year-old drug conviction and was trying to be an electrician in the sewer. So he wasn't around kids, he wasn't around controlled substances, and he wasn't around money. He was in the sewer trying to be part of the sewer overhaul we have going on in Greater Hamilton County. So that's the kind of thing where the relevance of the offense needs to fit with the job. What's the job? What's the nature of the job? And how does it relate to the crime?
So relevancy, in other words, you're giving the hiring manager a little more flexibility.
That's right.
And enabling them to look at the circumstances of the person, each individual case.
That's right.
As opposed to it just being an automatic, nope, you're out the door.
That's right.
And then, of course, what you were referring to earlier was clearer postings, right? Clearer
yes.
job postings now.
That's right.
So that people don't waste their time applying for
– right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. And so all of this combined is one example of a set of common sense reforms that help remove barriers for people after they get out of prison and jail, which is a critical thing to think about. But I think why I'm so excited about Ariel's work and others is we need to not have so many people in prison, period. We just need to stop, number one, sending people in, and for those that are in, take a harder look about which ones we can safely and responsibly release. And I'm really grateful to the President Obama to, take this first small step in that direction.
Now, talking about sentencing reform, there's a distinction between people who are addicted mm-hmm. and people who are actually dealing in this. Mm-hmm. Do you think we need harsher penalties for people who are dealing in drugs?
At this juncture, we have in America, I think it's hard to have a sense of normalcy about any sentence. We are the world's so vastly beyond anywhere else in the world that the severity of our punishments have lost all deterrent effect. We're way beyond deterrence in the level of punishment that we impose on really any offense, whether you're talking about drug trafficking or otherwise. I will say that the executive director of the Ohio Justice and Policy Center, David Singleton, is on something called the Ohio Criminal Justice Recodification Committee, which is working right now to revise the Ohio Revised Code. And one of the topics that's been discussed there is there are certainly people that are addicted to addicted to substances. There are high-level traffickers. There are also people who are addicted who are doing nothing but basically selling to use, to sell to use, to sell to use. So they look like traffickers but really are just users who just are trying to make a buck to get their next hit. So we need to distinguish – my instinct would be to find a distinction between those traffickers, in quotes, sellers, and the high-level traffickers. But at the higher level, you're not getting any greater deterrence or really any greater safety by like turning their 10-year sentence into a 20 or their 20 into a 25 or 30. That's not saving us anything. It's not protecting our children. All it's doing is costing us taxpayers tens of thousands, millions of dollars, really, if you look at the aggregate effect of our state prison population.
And as far as back to the idea of fear hiring, how effective has that been? How well has that worked at helping people reintegrate?
Yeah, there's anecdotal evidence and there's some stats from other states. We don't have great stats in Ohio about like what's been the outcome yet. I mean, the bill actually just went into effect at the very end of 2015. So there hasn't been great research yet in Ohio. There's definitely evidence in other cities like in Minneapolis and I believe in North Carolina, but don't quote me on that, where they've done research to show the effect that it's increased the number of people that have gotten and kept jobs. Because what we've seen is that not only do people get jobs, but oftentimes people with records are some of the most loyal and faithful employees because they're so grateful for the opportunity they've been given.
So you're touching on a question I was going to ask. Why would an employer hire somebody with a record? What are the benefits?
Yeah, I mean, there's those benefits of the quality of the people. I mean, again, the reason we do the whole fair hiring, ban the box thing is that you look at the quality of the person. What do they bring to the job? But generally, people with records are so grateful that they're loyal. There's been great research. For example, Johns Hopkins, the number one health system in the country, is actually quite assertive in hiring people with records from the urban Baltimore neighborhood where it's located. And they have something like a 90% retention rate, which is way off the charts for any of their other employees. So they've shown that both the bottom – the woman who does that, the vice president of Johns Hopkins, her name is Pamela Polk, will say this is not a charity effort. This is the bottom line for our company. This is a business decision and it's the right business decision because these folks are loyal. They bring a good worth ethic and they stick around.
So the fair hiring law, that just applies to state and local government at this point, right?
Absolutely. So the fair hiring policy has been sort of a bully pulpit opportunity. Like we, the public entity as a hiring entity, are setting the standard for the rest of the employers in Ohio, but we're not forcing them to. There are also incentives to employers. There's a federal tax credit available for employers that want to hire people with felony records. There is also something in Ohio we call certificates of qualification for employment. So it's a long mouthful, but the reason it's so critical is one of the number one reason that employers say that they do background checks is they say we're afraid of negligent hiring. We're afraid of getting sued for hiring somebody with a felony. Well, in Ohio, we've designed a law that says if you hire people with this certificate, you cannot be sued for negligent hiring. In essence, we, the state government, the state courts in this case, have looked at this person, vetted them. We've done the due diligence for you. Therefore, you don't incur any extra legal liability in hiring these folks with old records.
So what's the likelihood that there will be a fair hiring law that applies to the private sector? Is that something that could happen?
I think the appetite for our current Republican-dominated government to do anything that feels like an imposition, a requirement, you know, dictating something to private industry is really low, like very low likelihood of that style of governance. This exemplary, you know, setting the example style, for example, with the state government itself doing this model, is probably more of the style. It could extend the one extension I can envision happening maybe is to vendors, contractors that do stuff on the state's dime, people that build roads or provide resources or services to the state government. Perhaps they could be required. But again, that's theory. There's no state law or even proposed legislation for that.
So what's next? What other changes do you think need to be made to help people reintegrate?
Yeah, my passion right now is getting fewer people in. There really needs to be – we are almost at a record level in Ohio. We have 50,900 people in state prison in an institution designed to hold 38,000. So we're at 133% of capacity. Earlier before the show, we had talked briefly about California Prop 47 is something that we briefly discussed. And in California, what they did is they reclassified six felonies down to misdemeanors. And they did it retroactively. So if you were currently in prison on one of those felonies, you walked because it's no longer a prison sentence. If you had one of those felonies from umpteen years ago, you could get that reclassified and now job opportunities are open to you. 5,000 people were released from state prison and jail because of that reclassification. Tens of thousands of people are not going to go into prison because of that. So there's a and that was because California was even in a worse prison crisis than we were. That's the example of a safe and smart way of reducing the prison population by letting people out. And it's a sort of much larger example of the beginning of what Ariel did with the Clemency Project.
Well, Stephen and Ariel, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you so much.
University of Cincinnati College of Law student Ariel Gugisberg and Stephen Johnson Grove, senior staff attorney at the Ohio Justice and Policy Center. Coming up, we'll talk about Gold Star mothers and hear some history of local service members who were killed during World War II. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.